The French have banned smoking. Mon Dieu. Imagine Parisians in cafes sipping café crème without their Gauloise, or enjoying a glass of wine without a gitane in their hands. But yes, the French have banned smoking in all public places. Richard Klein's a French professor at Cornell. He's also the author of Cigarettes Are Sublime. Klein is not happy, to say the least, about the French smoking ban. And Strange Champs asked him why.
I find it a somewhat disturbing development. Mm. Banning smoking, public smoking, is a gesture which, beneath the surface considerations of public health, often conceals some assault on our liberties.
Mm. Now, I don't smoke, and I've always been kind of uncomfortable in restaurants or trains when other people are smoking a lot. And I haven't minded the other bans on smoking that I've heard about. But I have to say, when I heard about the ban in Paris, it just seemed a little bit sad, like the end of an era. Do you think the smoking ban will change something fundamental about Paris?
Well, I think it's already a reflection, and that's the point I'm trying to make, that it's in a way a reflection of the fact that the French society itself is becoming more and more repressive. Somehow the ban on smoking is in some sense a harbinger of a more systematic repression of freedoms. I mean, tobacco has always been associated with freedom, particularly in America, ever since, you know, the settlers in Virginia. Women, needless to say, were not allowed to smoke at all in public until the beginning of the 20th century. In France, women were not allowed to have cigarette rations until 1945, the moment at which they were allowed for the first time to vote. The notion that the freedom to smoke belongs to a more general class of freedoms is an idea which, it seems to me, has been largely ignored in the present climate where cigarette smoking and cigarettes have been so demonized.
When I grew up, smoking seemed somehow part of what was maybe stereotypically French. It was part of jazz music and poets and cafes and bars and where people would stay up all night and talk about cubism and smoke. Do you think French culture itself can extract itself from smoking?
Well, it may be difficult. I mean, cigarettes, in my opinion, are a mixed blessing. That's to say, they provide a great many sort of benefits, which are, for the moment, sort of largely unheralded in our society. And chief among them, it seems to me, is that they provide people a sort of moment of, how shall I say, Promethean beauty in their lives, that to be able to manipulate fire and smoke and ash, to be able to make beautiful gestures with cigarettes in your hand. It's very clear in cinema, in art, that there's something poetic about the cigarette.
So it's more than just the sensual pleasure of smoking. It's more than just the taste and the feeling of the smoke in your mouth and even the aesthetic pleasure of kind of holding a cigarette in your hand. There's something deeper going on?
Well, paradoxically, it's a peculiar kind of pleasure. I mean, it's what I would call an adult pleasure, which I distinguish from childish pleasures, which are generally sweet and taste good the first time you taste them and every time after that, and that eventually you sort of grow out of when you become an adult. Adult pleasures are pleasures which usually taste bad the first time you try them and continue to taste bad much of the time, as do cigarettes. But it's the bad taste that you quickly learn to love. Of course, there's risk, but that's the nature of adult pleasures. Adult pleasures are always sort of risky, but they're also what gives life its charm, if you like. And to eliminate risk from one's life altogether, it seems to me, is very un-French.
This is partly what you mean when you call cigarettes sublime in the title
That's
of your
right.
book. I mean, you're referring to sublime. You're not meaning just wonderful. You're harking back to the German philosopher Immanuel Kant.
That's right. Where sublime, he distinguishes in the Critique of Judgment between two kinds of aesthetic pleasure, the aesthetic pleasure one takes in a beautiful form, and the aesthetic pleasure that one takes in certain experiences of the infinite, when you suddenly are walking in the Alps and find yourself in front of an abyss. Your first response is fear and awe at the terror. But if you're standing safely on a ledge, a second moment comes, he says, in which you feel some intense satisfaction. That's to say, sublime aesthetic pleasure always has a negative moment, a moment of a kind of intimation of mortality. And that, if you survive, is the source of a kind of pleasure, an intense sublime pleasure, which philosophers and artists in the 18th century in particular understood very well.
Well, this strikes me as a very romantic, very Keatsian sort of notion, but I mean, you were suggesting that cigarettes are an adult pleasure, but somebody else might say, maybe it's time we grew up and realized that this isn't romance. Cigarettes are going to kill people.
Alcohol kills people, and drugs kill people, and driving fast cars kills people. I mean, if you smoke cigarettes nonstop for 80 years, you're almost certain to get emphysema. But if you need to smoke cigarettes between the ages of 20 and 30, for example, in order to deal with the stresses and pressures of that sort of time of life, and if you stop smoking at the age of 30, and by the time you get to be 50, you've eliminated any conceivable risk from smoking. So it all depends on how you use cigarettes, just as how you use alcohol or fast cars or many other adult pleasures. Sex, which there is no such thing as safe sex. I mean, sex is always dangerous psychologically or physically, and it depends on how you use it. And that's what we should be teaching our children, not that they should never touch a cigarette. It seems to me we should have an annual smoking day in which adolescents are allowed to try it and where they'll be able to, on the one hand, hear the truth about cigarettes. And the truth is that cigarettes are a mixed blessing. They're very bad for your health. People knew in the 19th century that cigarettes contain nicotine, which is an extremely deadly poison in small quantities, a very tiny bit. Pure will kill a very large rat, and every time you smoke a cigarette, you're ingesting this poison. There's no question about the harmfulness of cigarettes, but as I said, like many adult pleasures, it also has advantages. It's a source of consolation in times of loss. It's a way of controlling anxiety. That's why soldiers smoke and people waiting in the wings and journalists. It allows a lot of women in particular to diet and control their weight. But above all, I'm impressed by the beauty of cigarettes, the way it sort of introduces a kind of a pause into your daily experience, a way of stepping back and stepping outside of your quotidian preoccupations. Some people said in the 19th century that to smoke was to pray, that the vertical movement of the smoke lifts the spirit to some more transcendent realm. There are many advantages. I could go on and on about the beauties and charms.
But you're making, more than beauties and charms. You're making cigarettes sound almost sacred.
Well, it seems to me that in these times, in these days, in order to counter the demonization of cigarettes, it's necessary, perhaps hyperbolically, to exaggerate the benefits, because nobody talks about the benefits and the charms at all in our public discourse.
Richard, before I let you go, we've been talking about the long connection between cigarettes and the arts, and there are so many poems you quote in your book, and I wondered if you would finish by reading one for us.
Okay. This is a poem by Lafargue, who was a sort of disciple of Baudelaire, the great 19th century French poet, who wrote a sonnet about the cigarette. "Yes, this world is flat and boring. As for the other, boring. I myself go resigned to my fate without hope, and to kill time while awaiting death, I smoke slender cigarettes, thumbing my nose at the gods. Onwards, you living, keep up the fight. Poor future skeletons, I am plunged into infinite ecstasy by the blue meandering that twists itself towards the sky and puts me to sleep like dying perfumes from a thousand smoldering pots. And I enter paradise, flowered with brightly clear dreams, where elephants in heat are seen to mix in fantastic waltzes with choirs of mosquitoes. And then, when I awake, dreaming of my verse, I, my heart full of the sweetest joy, contemplate my dear thumb, roasted like a goose's drumstick." I mean, that says something about the way in which, you know, cigarettes turns your hands brown from the stain of the tobacco. But the whole idea that tobacco sort of opens up kind of another world into which you can escape from this world is a very common theme and linked to the whole notion of the last cigarette, where people before they're about to go to the gallows want only to smoke a cigarette in order to somehow stand outside themselves for a moment, to open a kind of parenthesis in ordinary time in order to dream.
Richard Klein is the author of Cigarettes Are Sublime, and Strange Chimps spoke with him. And no, surprisingly, Mr. Klein does not smoke.